Is this coming out? All right, good. Awesome. Well, we're running a little bit behind just because the main group got out, so I'm going to go ahead and kick us off. First, let's pray, and then I'll introduce myself, and we'll kind of get this session going. So if y'all would bow with me. Father, thank you for this evening, the opportunity that we have tonight to grow as fellow Christians, to learn about how to do your work through the local church as well as we can through the gifts that you've given us. And Father, help us to have a mind to be better in whatever areas that you have placed us, that anything we can do, we know we can do better. And Father, we want to glorify you through all that we do. So bless this time and our learning. It's in your son's name I pray. Amen. All right, welcome. This session is called Hello, My Name Is, and what we're going to be doing is focusing on how in your life Bible studies, you can move people from that first time experience all the way through until they are plugged in, serving, and using their spiritual gifts to help your life Bible study grow, and then turn around and do the same thing for other people. So we're really going to start with what happens in that first encounter, and then we're going to walk through what are some strategies you can use as a life Bible study to get people incorporated, and then we're going to move on into targeting and training new volunteers. It's kind of the general scope of what we're going to be doing. But let me introduce myself so that you know that I have at least some knowledge of what I'm talking about. My name is Andy Jennings. I'm the singles and college minister at First Baptist Church of Dallas. So I work in the middle of downtown Dallas in a venue that's probably about the same size as this building. We go vertical, y'all go horizontal because we don't have any more room downtown. But I've been doing this for 2.5 years. We have a really great group of singles. I went to my undergraduate degree at University of Oklahoma. I was originally doing mathematics, and there's a bridge there that I won't bother to get into, but I got my undergraduate degree in mathematics, went down to A&M to get a PhD in mathematics so I could do research and I could teach, and it was really there that God called me into ministry. So I got a master's degree there, then went up to Fort Worth to Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary, and that's where I did my training, and it was really right after I graduated from there that I got the call from First Baptist Dallas, and I've been doing that for just over 2.5 years now, singles in college. I get them at 18, and I care for them until they die. That's the way it goes. So we have three groups. We have college, we have young singles, and then we have what we call our 40 and over singles. We experimented with a lot of names, older singles, experienced singles, mature singles. They didn't like any of those, so 40 and over was kind of the generic thing. So that's what I deal with, and so my perspective is going to come a lot from dealing with especially young adults, but I tried to make this lesson something that can transfer, that you can contextualize no matter what group you're in. So that's what we're going to work on. The learning the art of integrating folks into your LBS. We are Texas people, so we refer to people as folks. The first thing we're going to do is talk about turning first-time guests into regular attendees. How many of you remember the first time that you walked on this campus? How many of you, this is your first time on this campus, besides me? Anybody in here? Okay. So you remember the first time that you walked onto this campus. Do y'all remember kind of what that experience was like? I experienced it today. You park in a parking lot. You'll have some wonderful signs. It's great. It guides you right to that guest parking. And then I walk into a massive building. I learn very quickly that y'all are difference makers. That's everywhere. But I had no idea where to go. I had no idea what y'all were about. I know nobody here except y'all's singles minister, Don Munton, and his, not assistant, but the programming guy, Joshua. They're the only ones here that I know. So I'm walking into this kind of an atmosphere, and you may not remember, and this is what we're going to talk about in a second, the sort of anxiety that it produces to walk into a new environment with a bunch of people you don't know, in an environment you don't know, and quite possibly forgetting where you parked when it's all over and trying to get back there. So that's something that I want you to think back on, because it's going to be really important as we talk about how to get first-time guests in. And this is where the curse of knowledge comes in. There's a great book called Made to Stick. If you're a teacher and you haven't read this book, I highly recommend it. It's written at a popular level. You don't have to have an academic degree to get it. But one of the things that they really focus on in this book on Made to Stick, how to teach ideas that stick with people, is the curse of knowledge. Now, from a teacher's perspective, when you get up and you teach something, you have all of this background information that you know about what you're teaching. You've done the research, you've done the work, you've crafted the lesson. You know a lot more about what you're teaching than the people who listen to you. But the same thing happens with us, with leaders who have been a part of Houston's First for a long time, who are integrated into a Life Bible study, who are serving and have been doing things for a long time. We can forget what it's like to be a first-time guest. And my guess is if I asked you to recount that experience, it would be tainted by the experience you've had since then. You're a lot more comfortable in your Life Bible studies. You know people. You know their backgrounds. You know where they come from, how long they've been there, what they're doing in the church. You know your way around this building. You know how to find the good seats in the worship center. You know you have your little spot. Somebody who's first walking onto your campus knows none of that. And it's hard for us to put ourselves in their shoes because we know and they don't. We have this tainted experience in our mind of what we know that they don't. The curse of knowledge makes it hard for you to remember what it's like to be new because you aren't new anymore. And that's something that you have to remember when you are interacting with people for the first time. It's not something you can overcome, really. It's just something you have to recognize you're dealing with. The anxiety they're feeling, you're not feeling. The newness that they're feeling, you're not feeling. And the comfort that you're feeling, they're not feeling. That's the way that it works. So when I think about the average guest who walks into one of my classes, now First Baptist Dallas, we are in the heart of downtown Dallas. Y'all are a little more fortunate here, although the streets around here are a little hard to navigate too. But downtown Dallas is probably a lot like downtown Houston. Everything's a one-way street. Everything in doubt. Who thought of one-way streets? That's ridiculous. But if you miss the church, you can't turn around and come right back. You have to figure out some weird, loopy way to take five or six streets and come back around to our parking garage. We don't have lots. We have garages. And there are three different garages you can park in. And as much as we try with signage to help people understand where to park, it's really hard when you're coming downtown for the first time and you don't know your way around to feel comfortable going, oh, that's the garage that I'm supposed to park in. Let me drive right up there and just park. So that's the first anxiety producer. They're trying to figure out how to navigate how to get on our campus. And then they're trying to figure out how to navigate our campus. Our campus covers a full city block. It actually has a sky bridge that spans a street. So you park in a garage, you walk over the sky bridge, and you're in front of our worship center. But to get to our Sunday school classes, which are the equivalent of y'all's Life Bible studies, you have to walk across the concourse, come into a completely different building, find some elevators in our atrium, and go up to the fourth floor, which is where my Sunday school classes meet. Now, by the time a person has done that, they've navigated the streets, they've parked in the garage, they've tried to find somebody with a lanyard who seems to know what they're talking about to lead them to a class that they've never been to, that they probably don't know the name of, and they stand at the door of my class. All of that is in the background of their mind. That whole experience they've just had is in the background of their mind when they meet me or somebody in my class who's greeting them. That's where your job starts. That's where your job starts. Somebody who's got all of that in the background of their mind, who's in a brand new place, it is your job, either as a greeter or as a director or as just somebody in a Life Bible study, to take that person and to make them feel at home. And that is not an easy thing to do. It takes work, it takes effort, and it takes intention to do that. So, what can you do to make the hour they spend in your class a pleasant experience? After all of that has happened, after they drag themselves down on a Sunday morning, how do you make that a pleasant experience? That's what we're going to talk about first. Now, I've got something really cool. I have a $10 gift card right here. It is good for Chili's, Macaroni Grill, Maggiano's, or On the Border. I suppose they're all owned by the same company, and that's why this gift card is good for all of them. I want somebody to raise their hand, and I want you to tell me, where did I do my undergraduate degree? University of Oklahoma. Come get your gift card. There's a little card with it that you need to fill out. If you would fill that out and give it to Joey, okay, so that he knows who got that. Joey, raise your hand. Give it to that guy. I did my undergraduate degree at the University of Oklahoma. Now, why was that information suddenly very important to you? There was value placed on that, right? There was value placed on the information that I gave you about 8 minutes ago. Suddenly, this benign introduction of myself became something that was meaningful to you because you could get something from it. That is how you have to view every bit of information a first-time guest gives you when they walk in the door. If you meet someone new, you need to put value on everything that they tell you. That's what we're going to get into greeting teams, right? When they walk into your classroom, what you should have, and I think based on the discussion that Greg was having in there and everything that I've heard about y'all's groups, you have a lot of these teams already, but I want to at least reiterate the importance of this. You need to have a greeting team. These are the smiling faces that these anxiety-ridden people are going to encounter when they enter your classroom. And these people are incredibly important, so treasure and value them. The first thing you can do to make a first-time guest feel comfortable is have that smiling face ready to greet them at the door. Here's the deal. I have been in church all my life, and every time I've walked into a church, a new church or an old church, there's somebody standing at the door greeting me. And what's really fun for me is when I introduce myself to them week after week and they don't know me, right? You go up and you're like, hi, my name's Andy. They're like, Andy, glad to meet you. Man, we are so glad that you're here. And then next week, just for fun, I'll go back to the same door and I'll go, hi, my name's Andy. Andy, so glad to meet you. We are glad that you're here. And I'll do that week after week. And this guy who's standing at the door, as well-meaning as he is, never knows who I am. Never knows. Every time, it's like the first time I met him. That is a good idea in theory to have somebody at the door standing and greeting. But if that's the way it turns out, that you have a guest who comes 2 or 3 weeks in a row and every time they're greeted, it's like the first time that they came, they're going to get a particular impression of your class that you don't want them to have. And that is that you don't care that they're there. You don't care who they are. You don't care about anything that has to do with them. On the other hand, if you have a nice, smiling face who says, I want to know your name, I want to know something about you, I want to know what's going on in your life right now, if you're willing to share that, I mean, if that's something that they're willing to give you, this team is your CIA. This is the first point of contact that a first-time guest is going to have. These people are the ones who data mine for you. They give you the information that you need in order to make a connection with somebody who is coming into your class. And I'm not talking about prying. I mean, don't go beyond what people are willing to tell you. And don't ask awkward questions like what's your mother's maiden name and what's your social security number and can I open a credit card in your name? Don't ask those sorts of things. But I'm talking about the meaningful questions. Who are you? What brought you down here? That's the next thing. I'm getting ahead of myself. The reality is that new people want to be known. I'm a talker. Oh, I love to talk. It's in the Jennings DNA. All of the Jennings side of my family never stops talking. And my mom, who's a McClung, that side of the table never talks. And so we make fun of each other. They make fun of us about how we always talk. We make fun of them about how they never talk. And how my mom and dad have been married for the 37 years they have, I don't know. My dad does all the talking. My mom just sits there. And there's different groups of people, but we like to talk, and we like to talk about ourselves. We like to talk about other people. We like to see what's going on. We like to get to know new people. My dad was that guy. He served in various different ways in the church. He's always been a volunteer. He's a chemical engineer, which is weird because he's an extrovert. But we always left church late because he couldn't walk 5 feet without talking to somebody. And my mom would be halfway out to the car wondering where he was. But this is just a reality. This is what my dad knew that I had to learn. Is that what he was doing was finding people he didn't know, and he was getting to know them. New people want to be known. You'll run into the occasional person that's very private and doesn't really want to talk. That, in my experience, is rare, especially among young people. People want to think that you want to know them. And so there are things that you can ask, or your team can ask, that really help with that. Things like, what brings you to Houston's First today? Are you looking for a new church? Did you just move to Houston? Are you looking for a young singles group that and your church doesn't have that? What's going on? What brought you here today? And then your job is to shut up and to let them answer and to take all of that in. I know I just said shut up in church. I'm sorry. But to take all of that in. Are they looking for a new church? Are they visiting? What's their occupation and how long have they been doing that? What do you enjoy about it? What do you not enjoy about it? I mean, just what is normal banter and something that social media has sort of filtered out in our lives, right? The art of conversation. This is what greeting teams should be good at. What's your occupation? How long have you been doing that? Is anything big going on in your work week? Now, how shocking is it when somebody that you meet for the first time goes, hey, what do you do? Oh, I work in nursing. Oh, really? Man, I know that that's tough. I know that that means you work nights. Have you had any crazy stories from this week? Well, yeah, there was this one guy that came in and blah, blah, blah. Are you, if they're married, what's their spouse's name? Do they have kids? And then this one. This one's really odd. Whenever I mention this one, people go, first-time guest, you want to ask for prayer requests? Yeah. Because so many people that walk into your door, the reason they came to your Life Bible Study group is because they're broken. Because they want community. Because they are missing something in their life and they know that. And if you say, hey, is there anything going on that I can pray about that pulls them in and says, this is a community that wants to know me. This is what I've been missing. This is what I'm looking for. These are things that you can do for a first-time guest that will really draw them in to make them feel like this is a place I could belong. This is a place I can find community. This is a place that cares about me. This is something that a lot of people have trouble doing, starting these conversations, being willing to do that. So let's look at who you ought to target for these sorts of things. What type of a person should be a greeter? Well, first of all, it's somebody who has a spiritual gift that goes in that direction, right? The gift of mercy or the gift of kindness or something like that. But in general, you can look for people who have a couple of sets of characteristics. It helps if they're naturally outgoing. I have a guy, we'll call him Billy, who loves to be at everything that we do in our singles group. I mean, everything. And he's there like 2 hours early for everything. He's always offering to volunteer, always offering to help. And I am happy to let him do it. Billy has Asperger's. And he wants to greet sometimes. And I have to tell him, you know what? Your strength is not in this area. If you don't know anything about Asperger's syndrome, it makes it really hard to read body language. They don't get social cues. And the thing about Billy is he is an amazing servant. And he has a servant's heart. And he wants to be involved. And I have places for him to be involved. This is not one of them. And it can be really hard to tell somebody who says, hey, can I be a greeter? No, I don't think you have that skill set. But as a leader in the class or as somebody looking to get into a volunteer position, sometimes those are things that you have to flesh out, right? There is a place for you to serve. This might not be it because of what your spiritual gifting is and just in general what we're looking for. Naturally outgoing and have a strong ability to read body language because you're going to have to work on the fly getting to figuring out what does this person want to share and not want to share? How should this conversation go? Do I just need to get them into the class and hook them up with somebody there to talk, or do they want to chat? Can I get to know them a little more? This has to be somebody who's willing to forego the usual conversation time at the beginning of class. I know for singles, that time is so valuable to them. Right? This is where once a week they get together with all of their friends, they're going to study the Bible, they're going to have a great time. Most of my classes also go to lunch afterward. And so I tell people, if you're going to be on this team, your time for socializing is at lunch after church. What I need you to be willing to do is target people you do not know and have conversations with them. That's your job. Willing to sit and engage with new people through the meeting time and be very genuine in their interactions. Don't get the guy who, well, I mean, I'm a mathematician, so I'll just make fun of mathematicians. Right? Extroverted mathematicians are the people that stare at your shoes while they're talking to you. Right? That's the way that they are. 10 years ago, I would not have been good at this job. I'll just be honest. I am naturally introverted. I am naturally quiet. That's just kind of the way that I was through high school. And it wasn't until I felt like God was calling me into ministry that I really started putting myself in positions where I couldn't be that way and forcing myself out of my shell. And now I just can't stop talking. I've gone too far in the other direction. But that's the way that this needs to be. I mean, these are people who want to talk and they want to have genuine interactions with somebody. So if you're looking for a place to serve, if you're one of those potential leaders who's come to this event tonight, think about it. Is this something that you could do? This is an extremely important role in a class because you are that first line that people will encounter. And then in general, and this is a rule especially for singles, but I think it applies for marrieds as well. You want guys talking with guys and girls talking with girls regardless of marital status. It breaks down barriers, makes people more comfortable, and it removes any sign of impropriety. Right, so try to have a mixture of guys and girls. This team doesn't need to be huge, but this is sort of one of those teams that doesn't require a lot of training. And so if you have a lot of people wanting to volunteer in your class and they tend to kind of fit this bill, give them a shot. This is a place where people can kind of naturally go in, and this can be a bigger team, and people can kind of rotate in and off each week. So that's who you're kind of looking for. And then there's the follow-up side of this. So you've got this first-time guest. They've come in. They've been greeted. Somebody's gotten to know them and kind of mined all of this data. What happens to that data? What happens to the information about that person? Well, if it just goes off into the ether, then your time was not well spent, and your efforts were not well spent. If you have this conversation with somebody and you don't write any of it down, you don't follow up with them about it, then you're only doing half of the job. And as my dad always said in baseball, a good catch and a bad throw is a bad play. This is the throw, your outreach teams. It can consist of some of the same people on the greeting team, but this is the team that is going to follow up with these first-time guests after they leave your class to let them know you know they were there, you care they were there, and you want them to come back, that you paid attention to who they were and you noticed them. This is where most churches, in my opinion, drop the ball. Greeting is great. Got a question?
Yeah, we do something called outreach here on Monday night, right?
Okay. Yeah. I think that's awesome. And I'll talk about, as I'm going through this list, maybe it'll kind of help flesh that out. If I haven't answered what you're looking for, just raise your hand again when I get to the end of this section. So outreach teams, this is where when people give you their information, and at First Dallas, our three critical pieces of information are your name, your email, and your phone number. That way we can contact you. And we have two different ways to contact you. We can send you an email if we want to send out something kind of broadly to let the group know about an event, or if it's just a little bit easier. But most of all, I want a phone number. People my age, I'm a millennial, we text a lot, we use social media a lot, and kind of the idea of talking on the phone produces a lot of anxiety in young people these days. And I know that because sometimes I'll call and people will not answer, and then they will text me back 5 minutes later asking what I wanted, right? That's always really fun. But your goal is within a week of their visit to make some sort of contact with them. The postcard, I think, is great. And people don't really get meaningful mail anymore. I don't. I get lots of trash in my mail. To have a handwritten card, I think, is really helpful. The phone contact, in my opinion, is your most critical one. Now, it can be by a text if you think that that's going to be better. But to reach out to them sometime during the week and to say, hey, this is so-and-so from your Life Bible study, especially if you met them, to say, hey, I met you on Sunday, and I just wanted to let you know we were glad you came. Do you have any questions? Is there anything I can pray for you about? Is there anything you need help with? Was there anything that was confusing on Sunday morning that I can clarify for you? Do you want to know what our upcoming events are? Those sorts of things. That follow-up is the most critical part. And the reason I say that is because when I ask our young singles, why did you choose First Dallas over places like Watermark and The Village and Prestonwood, who are much more geared toward a younger audience? It is hard at First Dallas to get young people in because we're a 150-year-old church, and people think that 150-year-olds go there and that's all it's for. We actually have a very vibrant young adult ministry, but you have to be really overt about it. You have to tell people that it's there. And well, the one thing that people who are part of our group will tell me is, I went to those other churches and they greeted me when I came in and then nobody spoke to me ever again. And when I came back, it was like the first time again, right? It's that they cared when I was there, but they didn't follow up, which meant to me is what they say, that wasn't sincere, that what I got on Sunday morning wasn't sincere. And at First Dallas, we sort of go overboard with this. Generally speaking, you will get somewhere from 3 to 4 contacts in the first week that you come. You will get an email from our outreach minister. You will get a call from our retired executive pastor, Walter Gilliam. He makes about 120 phone calls a week. He just paces the fourth floor and with his phone. He's 70 years old, and he knows how to use Siri much better than me because he just paces and has her call people for him so that he can chat with them. And he does about 5 miles every week. But he'll call, I will call, and then usually somebody from the Sunday school class will call. And you go, well, isn't that a little weird? I make 30 phone calls a week. I make 30 outreach attempts a week. Sometimes it's email if they didn't give us their phone number. But I make 30 outreach attempts every week. As a staff member, that's required of us. Which means in 2.5 years, I've made somewhere around 4,500 phone calls. I can count on one hand the number of people who said, stop calling me. But the number of people who say, you know what, you're the fourth person who calls me. Y'all really care about people when they come. That I get every week. Somebody every week tells me that. You're the fourth person to call me. Y'all really care. Y'all, that really means something to me. And there are people in our group who say, the reason I chose First Dallas over all of these other options is because of the outreach, because of the follow-up. So it's not easy. You have to get a team together to do this because it can really wear people out to make these calls every week. But in general, you want to make that contact within 7 days. You want to use the information your greeters got. Now, don't be creepy about this. Don't say, hey, you know, so-and-so told me that you're into all of this stuff, because that makes you sound like you're sharing rumors. But, I mean, if there's something significant, say, you know what, someone who met you said that you were struggling with this and you really wanted our prayer for that. Can I pray for you right now about that? That's meaningful. Now, yeah, do you have a question?
Yeah, because I'm in seminar for the single young adults. We have like 20 classes.
Right.
And so I was kind of wondering, you were talking about outreach, but we, particularly this time of year, will have someone come through and they're trying out, like this Sunday, maybe my class and then the next class. How do you make it different? Because if you're getting kind of the same generic postcard or same call from three different classes, like they're not feeling very special at the end of the month.
Right. That will be, I think, point number 5 here. I'll get to that in just a second. So outreach teams should be people who enjoy conversations. When I wait till Saturday to do my phone calls, they're due Saturday night at 7 p.m. When I wait till Saturday at 1 p.m. to start my phone calls, my prayer is, please don't answer the phone. I need to get through 30 phone calls, and I need to do it quickly. And it is always on Saturday afternoon that I call the one person who has had a really, really bad week. And you know what? That's just God talking to me, saying, you need to talk to this person. And I will get into a 30 or 45 minute conversation with this person. And they will share way more information than I was prepared on that phone call to receive. But the way I respond to them in when they're doing that is going to determine whether they feel like we care about them or not. And so it's my job to be conversational. It's my job to say, you know what, I wanted to get through this. I wanted to get this done in 2 hours. It's going to take 4 hours now. But because I care about you, that's okay. That's okay. It was my fault for waiting till Saturday anyway. So people who enjoy conversations, and as with greeters, try to keep this gender specific. Don't have guys call girls and girls call guys, even in married groups. Right. Try to get the if you've got a married couple, try to get the man's cell number and the woman's cell phone number and call in a gender-specific way. And here's the most important part, and I think this will answer your question. Have a way of tracking what type of outreach you're making that other people can have access to. Our church uses a program called Arena, which is just a giant database program. But the most important part of Arena is the section where we can enter in notes, and then anyone else who goes and looks up that person's information in Arena can read all the notes of all the conversations anybody's ever had with that person. That is super valuable. Now, y'all probably don't have Arena. Do y'all have that? Use it. And if you're a director, Joey was telling me that somebody told me that the directors send out the information to people who are doing outreach, rather than y'all necessarily having that information yourself. Directors include in that at least like 2 or 3 of the most recent conversations that have been had, because like in her case, you may go, hey, somebody from this other class called them last week and they came and visited my class this week. Now I'm reaching out to them. It would be helpful for me to say at the beginning of that conversation, I know this isn't the first class you've tried, but since you tried my class, I wanted to reach out to you and to see, did you like it? Did you have any questions? Is there anything I can help you with? But it's that background information that helps them feel like you know them. Right, and it's really helpful, because there are times where I have to enter in notes that said this person just admitted to me that they're in the middle of substance abuse, that they're about to go into rehab, and that they were sexually abused as a child or something like that. Now I go and I put that in under a special heading that only staff can see, But when Walter Gilliam or our outreach minister or somebody else tries to contact that person, they at least know a little bit of that background information, and they can begin to minister where that person needs it. But most of the time, what you're going to get is people who say, oh yeah, it was great, I had a good time, I'm planning on coming back. And you can just note, hey, I'm from this class and I called them, so if somebody else calls them after me, at least know that this conversation occurred. Now, if y'all can't leave notes in Arena, I would encourage you, especially directors or outreach team coordinators, who's ever in charge of that, ask your people just quick notes. Did you call them? Did you email them? Did you make contact? Quickly, what was the conversation about? What did you tell them? Keep those notes while you're making contacts, and then send that to your director so your director can enter it into the database. Or keep some kind of tab on what outreach has been going on in your class. It's just really, really helpful, because we have people who will visit our church and they will come back 6 months later. I don't remember them. They may not have even been in my area. They may have only visited the main service, but they'll come back 6 months later and I can go back into Arena and I can see what was the contact that was made with them 6 months ago, and can I follow up on that? All right, this is all really important, and it's a way, I mean, you can use Google Docs to do this. You want to keep it relatively secure, obviously. But this is something that as a class you can develop. Here's our system for doing this so that we know who we've contacted, how we did it, and what the outcome was. If you do those things, if you have the greeting class or the greeting team who really shows that you care, and then you have the follow-up afterward, I think it has been my experience, you are doing everything that you can to get that first-time guest back. Right? And that's the first hurdle, getting that first-time guest to come back. We have probably about a 20% success rate on that, which I think is pretty good considering we're a downtown campus. But if you can get them to come back, that means something, and it's then that you can really start to integrate them into your group. That's what we're going to go to next. Now, did I answer your question sufficiently? Okay, cool. So what comes next is building community beyond the classroom. So this is after Sunday morning, or this is as people are getting integrated in. This is how you knit the class together to take those first or second time visitors and make them really integrated parts of your class. And in general, just to get everybody in your class a little bit closer to one another. Building community beyond the classroom. Good community conquers all. Never forget this. Your life Bible study, I'm a teacher in one of our Sunday school classes, and I love to think that it is my deep wisdom and profound theological exposition that brings people back every week. That is absolutely wrong. It helps. I'm sure it helps. That's not what brings them back every week. Community is what brings them back every week. Here is something never to forget. People will put up with mediocre teaching for good community. They will put up with mediocre teaching for good community every single time. The reverse is not true. They will not put up with the most stellar teaching in the world if their community is not good, if they don't feel like they're connecting with anybody. The most wonderful teaching in the world won't keep them. The reason being, they can just go download it and listen to it on their phone. The reason they come to your building on a Sunday morning or to your growth groups on a weekday is because they want to be around people. They want to be around you, and they want to be around people who care about them. So, when we talk about community, there's a couple of perks to that. When changes have to happen, how many of you have ever been part of a Life Bible study that has, to use the nice church term, multiplied or created a new unit out of it? Have any of y'all been part of that? Is that a really fun process to tell people, hey, we're moving you out of this class and into a new class? Is that a fun process? Not generally, because we're all human, and all humans hate change. I don't know, it's just something about us. When we get comfortable, we don't like it. When changes have to happen like that, it is the community that will keep people from leaving. If you can move friend groups together to a new class, if you can move people who have really connected, if you can move them together to start a new unit, you will find it far easier and far more successful than if you just have to peel out a disconnected group of people, take half of them, and start something new. Community helps make that a lot better. Or when you have to move times, do y'all have multiple service hours? So if a Sunday school class or a Life Bible study has to move hours, gosh, things that you didn't think would really cause a lot of problems, We're taking your whole class and we're moving you from the 9:30 hour to the 11 o'clock hour. And you would think I just killed your grandmother, right? People just react that way. But when you can move a tight-knit community from 1 hour to another, it works a lot better than when you move a bunch of disjointed people from 1 hour to another. And the thing you need to remember is that the strongest bonds people make are almost always when they're working together outside of your Sunday morning classroom. And you can think about this in your own life. Where are friendships forged? Are they forged in the classroom? Did you make friends with a bunch of people in college who were sitting around you? Man, can you believe we're learning this together? Isn't this amazing that we're learning all of this together? I feel a deep connection between you and me because we learned this in the same way today. No, teaching has a different purpose. The community building takes place in other settings, on bowling nights and on Habitat for Humanity builds and on mission trips. That's where tight-knit community is built. It almost always comes when they're working on a project together, not when they learn something together. So remember that. If you're looking at your group and you're saying, you know what, we've got a lot of people in this class, but nobody seems to be clicking. There's something off. People just aren't getting connected. Maybe it's because y'all aren't doing enough things outside of the classroom that give people an opportunity to get to know one another on that personal level, to share favorite habits, to share favorite activities, to evangelize together, to go through that kind of crucible together of working and sweating and the tears and the prayer and everything that goes into that. It's in those environments that your best community is going to be forged. And I have classes in my group that can attest to that. The ones that don't do a lot of extracurricular activities tend to be the ones with the most attrition, the most turnover. But my largest singles class, we had 67 in there last Sunday between ages 25 and 35. They had a game night at a married couple who has nothing to do with the class in the last 3 years. But they still meet at this couple's house. 45 of the 67 were at that. Two-thirds. Now, if you can get two-thirds of people who show up on Sunday morning to show back up for anything else, that is success. But it's at that game night, that's where they become friends. That's where they get to know one another. So this is something that you've got in your arsenal. Good community, it conquers all. So how do you do it? Plan a variety of events that cover a broad range of interests. You will have your Dungeons and Dragons type people in your classrooms, and you will have your footballers in your classrooms. And sometimes those people overlap, not very often, but you have the people who it is their heart to serve, and you have those people that it is their heart to plan fun activities. And you've got this broad range of people in your class, which means you need to have a broad range of activities in order to incorporate all of them. That doesn't mean that you do 12 different things all year, but you want to mix it up so that everybody gets to do something regularly that they enjoy. Otherwise, people are going to stop coming to these things, and they're going to feel disjointed from your group, especially new people, especially those first-time guests, those second-time guests, the people that you're trying the hardest to incorporate in. So one way to make this really good is solicit feedback from your group about things they would like to do. Just put a card on the table and say, write down the top 3 activities you would like to see us do in the next 6 months. Then take all of that together and see, where's the overlap? Do people want to go, they really want to do a Habitat for Humanity build, or would they rather do a soup kitchen? Would they rather do a homeless outreach? Would they rather do something in a school serving kindergartners or things like that? When it comes to games, do they like bowling? Do they like going to sporting events? Do they like participating in sporting events? We've done things like bubble soccer. Nothing forges friendships like bubble soccer. And nothing can break friendships like bubble soccer either, when that guy that you thought was your friend like careens into you from the side and knocks you on your head. But then you can just get him back and everybody's fine. But we do bubble soccer. We've done a skating night where everybody dressed up in 80s. My wife crimped her hair. I didn't know that there were still crimpers in existence, but there are. And my wife looks like a totally different person with her hair crimped. It's great. We did that, so people are getting goofy together, and they're breaking down those barriers of trying to appear all put together. Do those sorts of things, and figure out what your people actually want to do. And don't make it all about serving or all about fun. You want to have a mixture of both. There, especially in young adults, young singles in particular, there's this push, we want to be serving, we want to be serving, and I want to help them serve. But if that's all that we do, then in some sense, we never get to see each other with our hair down. We never get to see who's the person who just can't bowl, but they will try to the very end to hit that one pin on the corner and try to get it down. Who's the person who you didn't know was really good at karaoke? Right? What are the activities you can do that are fun, and then some other activities that help people serve so they build those Christian bonds together, right? That service, that evangelism, doing the things God called us to do. And I would say you don't have to do these monthly. Our groups do them monthly. And the more regularly they do them, the higher the attendance is at the individual events because people look forward to it. So plan this broad range of events and use the fear of missing out. This is a young person thing, hashtag FOMO. It's the new thing after hashtag YOLO, which was after hashtag whatever. The fear of missing out. This is what drives me crazy because young adults will not commit to anything. Because 10 minutes before the event you're trying to put on, those concert tickets might come available, and that's a better thing to do, and so they're going to go over to that. The worst that I had was I had a gym night, and I had like 40 people who said on Facebook they were going to come. And then at 2:30 that afternoon, somebody decided to have a surprise birthday party for one of my directors, and nobody showed up to the night except 7 visitors who had never been before. That is where you have to redeem the fear of missing out by making your events the thing that can't be missed. In some sense, when I say redeem the fear of missing out, peer pressure is not always a bad thing if you use it for God's purposes. I call that accountability, right? Peer pressure that gets people to do what God wants them to do is not a bad thing. The peer pressure that there's going to be a conversation on Sunday morning in the class that people are on the outside of can be a strong motivator to get them to do what they need to be doing, right? Not just what you want them to do, what they need to be doing. So when it comes to that evangelism project, if you make it seem like you miss out on this, you're going to be on the outside of the conversation on Sunday morning because this is what everybody's going to be talking about. It will drive people to be more invested in what you're trying to do. This is why I say solicit advice or solicit ideas from people in your class. Do things that people actually want to do, not what you think they want to do. You will miss more often than you hit when you just do what you think they want to do. Get their information about it. Use social media. Those of you who aren't on Facebook or aren't on Twitter, learn one of the platforms. And use that to your advantage. Tell people what your class has been doing. Do it live even. I mean, I do that all the time. We'll post pictures on Facebook as we're doing things just to let people know, hey, this is what you're missing out on. You don't want to miss next time. You want people to realize that these community building events are important in their spiritual development. This is what it's all about, right? The church is not an activities club. In downtown Dallas, I cannot put on a bigger party than the Dallas Museum of Art or AT&T Stadium or Verizon Center. They have more money, they have more people, they have everything better than me, better lights, better music, better connections than I have. I can't put on something that's better than that. But what they don't have that I do is this community building spiritual development. No one else can offer that but you. No one else can offer that but you. And if people are visiting your life Bible studies, they want this. This is what they're after, and it's what you need to provide. So that is the idea of building community. Of course, that's not everything. I mean, there's books and books written on this. But these are some ideas that maybe your class isn't doing, and you think, you know what, our group isn't coalescing. Hopefully something in here has sparked your mind. This is something we need to do. We need to solicit some ideas from people. We need to start planning stuff more regularly. We've been doing parties. Maybe we need to do a service event, something service-oriented. Or we've only been doing service projects. It might be nice just to throw in a game night in there every once in a while. And then quickly, I hate to do this quickly because it's important, but it is kind of the last segment of incorporating first-time guests. Your goal in the spiritual development, helping people spiritually develop from first-time guest all the way into incorporated member of your life Bible study, is that eventually they would be the volunteers helping you and even replacing you as you move on to something else. That's your goal. That we want people using their spiritual gifts, not just being a number on the roll. We want people building their relationships with Christ and with others. How do you recruit and train volunteer teams? First of all, target people before you need them. This is the primary mistake that people make. They wait until there is a hole in their leadership, and then they have to panic and try to find somebody to fill that hole in 2 or 3 weeks before roles not getting taken or phone calls aren't being made. Target people before you need them. If you do outreach and greeting well, you're going to know potential leaders quickly. Right, those outgoing people who have a conversation with your greeters. These are potential leaders in the future. Target them. Tag them. Get to know them. You outreach to people, you have a conversation with them, and they say, you know what, at my previous church, I was on this team, or I helped with the roll sheet, or I helped plan events. Man, tag that person. Pay attention to them. Get to know them. Figure out what they're good at and hold them as a potential leader. Even put them into an apprenticeship underneath a current leader to start getting them trained on this. Have a way to know when your current leaders plan to rotate off. This is another thing that tends to slip through the cracks, right? Somebody comes to you one day, your outreach team coordinator, and says, hey, you know what? I got a new job. I'm going to be moving in a couple of weeks. I need to find somebody to replace me. It's much better for you to be keeping up with your leaders every 2 to 3 months and saying, hey, how are things going? Are there any changes on the horizon? Do you anticipate anything? Are you willing to keep serving for the next 6 months, 12 months, whatever it is? Know when your leaders are going to rotate off. And don't revisit the same well over and over. What I mean by this is there are people in your classes who are the wonder workers. They do everything, and they tend to be good at everything. And it can be very easy when you have a hole that you don't know how to fill in your leadership team to add one more job to that person and say, hey, can you take care of this too? Resist that urge for two reasons. You will burn that person out, and you are keeping somebody else from being able to use their spiritual gift in your class. Don't revisit the same wells over and over. Make it a point to try to find new people to fill holes. Have a training program. Now, obviously, this is a training program. That's why you're here. This is part of your church-wide training program. I encourage you have a training program as a class that is specifically tailored to the things you need in your class leadership, to the way that your class works, because not all outreach teams are the same. Not all greeting teams are the same. Life stage varies, marital status varies, and you interact with people in different ways. Have a way to train new people in a 3 to 4 week time frame to be able to do a job. Have it as your class. Focus on casting vision for the group. And this can be something you do even quarterly, just as a class leadership team. Get together, and it's not about planning details. It's not about figuring out where the holes are. It's about casting vision, and it's about celebrating. Right? Openly discuss problems. Figure out what's going on in the class. Invite potential new leaders to this so they can see what leadership is all about. And this is what I'm really getting at. These two things, when you're dealing with how to get people and keep people in leadership, you want to make sure that everyone has a clear set of goals and expectations and that everything is measurable. People want to know how to succeed at what you're asking them to do. They want to know how to succeed. They don't want to go for 6 months doing something and never get feedback on, is this what I'm supposed to be doing? Am I doing this right? Who knows how to do this right? I don't know if anybody knows how to do this right. I think they just gave me this job because nobody else wanted it. Right? People, without guidance, people tend to lose focus and in general will want to step out earlier from a leadership program. They'll want to step out earlier from a leadership position because they don't know if they're doing what they're doing right, and they don't seem to matter. But when you give people goals and expectations and you make it measurable, this is how you know if you're succeeding. This is what we want you to accomplish and how you know that you're getting there. Then people go, okay, I'm doing my job. I know what it is. I know how to do it, and I know whether I'm doing it. And then that's where you go back to this, right? Celebrating recent successes. Don't let hard work go unnoticed, especially in new leaders. Especially in new leaders. Don't let hard work go unnoticed. This is something that I think just in general we tend to struggle with, is patting somebody on the back and saying, you're doing a great job at this. I want you to know that. This class would not be the same without you. Yeah, well, I can stand up in front of a group of people and go, y'all are great leaders. This church would not be the same without you. But to go up to Joey and say specifically, here's what you did really well. Thank you for doing that. Our class would not be the same without you doing that. That's the kind of personal encouragement people need. And that's kind of where we're going to finish off. Make sure that everyone in your life study knows that your leaders are valuable. You want people to want to be on leadership? Celebrate your leadership publicly. Have your leaders stand up in the class and everybody give them a round of applause for what they've done. Talk about how your class has grown. Talk about, have people give testimonies about how your outreach team meant something to them. Have somebody who is a new member of your class stand up and share the story of how they became a new member of your class so that people see what your leadership team is doing. Make leadership something that people want to be a part of, not something that they get dragged into out of guilt or whatever. Tell your leaders they're doing a good job. Acknowledge when they go beyond the call of duty. Make leadership a desirable endeavor. Because this is the end stage. People using their spiritual gifts within the bounds of your life Bible study. And what you're hoping to do through this whole process, right? We started with the anxiety-filled person who's standing in front of your classroom for the first time. And your goal would be that however long it takes, but hopefully in no longer than about a year, somebody goes from that anxiety-filled position to understanding, I got to figure out what my spiritual gift is and I need to be using it. I'm incorporated into this group. They've gotten to know me. They loved on me. Now I need to turn around and I need to do that for somebody else who's new. I need to do the same thing, right? That's the discipleship process. Teaching people to be like Christ and then letting them turn around and teach other people how to be like Christ. That's your whole goal in life Bible study groups. It starts with that first anxiety-filled visit. And it ends when they, well, it doesn't end, but it goes on for their life as they use their spiritual gifts within this. Now, they may discover their spiritual gift is something that takes them out of your life Bible study group. Don't hit them over the head too hard for that because you just spent a lot of time and they're going away. But that's what they're supposed to do, right? That's what we want them to do. And again, when your life Bible study gets so big that you need to split, it's helpful to have these leaders that you've trained, people who know what it's all about, to help start those new groups that really give you that feeling we are growing as the body of Christ. We're doing what he's called us to do. So that was all a whirlwind. I hope something in there kind of hit you as a nugget that you can use. It's 9:05 now. I'm sure they're wanting us to get back on schedule. So what I'll encourage y'all to do, if you have questions, feel free to hang around. You've got about 10 minutes before you need to be at your next breakout group. I'll be happy to talk with you. Otherwise, you're free to go. Thank you so much for coming. Mr. Joey.
If y'all didn't sign in on the green sheet, please step forward at the end and sign up. Like you said, y'all have 10 minutes before your next breakout.